Welcome to the latest episode of 115 Miles. This episode is going to be one that I know that you will enjoy. We have some really good fun at the beginning. We put some things into room 101 and some great stuff in there. You'll have your own ideas on that. But then we jump into a much more deep and serious conversation in which Hass, I'm going to go out on a whim and say this, is his most vulnerable that he's ever been on 115 Miles podcast as we explore the topic of trauma. Now, we do this in a way where I believe there could be some big aha moments for people listening in. And we really wanted to give you something to take away in terms of how you might explore what trauma means to you and how it may have shown up in your life. Get stuck into this episode, have a listen in and see what you can take away from it. And if you haven't yet done so, come and follow us at 115 Miles Pod and make sure you've left us a review on the platform that you listen on. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. This is 115 Miles with Josh Connolly and Hassan Kaya. Growing up 115 miles apart, our lives couldn't have been more different. But we find ourselves today with many similarities and outlooks upon life. Join us on our podcast as we take a topical dive into life, work, culture, and everything in between. Hass, today you've showed up. Do you know, you've showed up looking like something out of Grand Theft Auto today.
Oh, is that a compliment?
Yeah, you know, like the hip hop style 90s lumberjack, yeah. Orange beanie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I reckon I could. I need a chain though, right? Just to complete the look.
Yeah, it would gold. Complete it. But is this how you used to dress when you were DJing?
No.
Do you ever DJ now?
No, but I've been getting the turntables out of retirement.
Do you?
To pass on to the next generation, yeah.
What, the kids like?
Yeah, well, like definitely. Like my daughter and me are really getting into hip-hop together. And the other two, Robin, my boy, he gets really obsessed with stuff. So... Yeah. At the moment, he's obsessed with yo-yos. Before it was Rubik's Cubes. But then we started watching scratching videos. So I'm going to try and live vicariously through him because I could never scratch.
What could you do as a DJ then?
Just mix and blend, bro. Mix and blend. On the ones and twos.
So what? Do you get the decks out?
They're out. They're all
vinyl, yeah, decks?
Yeah.
They
were
that's
out.
Not what they use nowadays, is it?
No, I think DJs? I think they do actually. They use something called Serato, which is like a time-coded vinyl. So you basically just connect that up to MP3. So it feels like you're playing a vinyl, but it's actually MP3s.
So it's not amazing. A vinyl, which is why
it is a vinyl. It is. It's two acetate vinyls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so shut up.
So it's, but it's not like a guitar, is it? Like if I,
like... Oh, look at you trying to turn it away. It isn't.
Listen to what I'm going to say. You know, like if somebody used to be in a band, every now and then on Friday night, I could see them getting a guitar out and like playing Wonderwall or whatever. Yeah. But what can you do the same with decks? Like get them out and just mix in a couple of tracks and that? It's not like a guitar that you can just whip out, is it? Or are your decks set up at home?
They're set up at home.
Are they?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but it's not like a guitar, Josh. No. You're right.
But your daughter's into it.
Well, they're starting to get into it. It's hard, though. Like, they're just, vinyl's so alien to them. So, but yeah, I think... Do you know how expensive vinyl is now? It's crazy. It's like, it costs like 30 quid for an album.
It's what? On a proper LP?
Yeah, like vinyl. A double LP.
Are you one of these people that says it sounds better when it's on record?
You used to
say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a wanky thing to say, isn't it?
It's not. Do you think? Really.
No. Like when I was into, well, still am, like when you're into punk music and all that, yeah, you get a lot of people that are like, oh, it sounds so much better on vinyl.
Yeah. A lot of punk would have been on 7-inch vinyls, wouldn't it?
Does it sound better on vinyl?
Yeah, it does.
Do you think there's a generation that say it sounds better on cassette? Or nowadays sounds better on CD when it's just sort of like every now and then goes... No, skips and you have to clean it.
None of that's real. It's only vinyl. That's real.
All right, mate.
Yeah.
I disagree that it sounds much better now, clear on MP3.
Good for you.
You can put that in your pipe and smoke it.
It's a bit more synthetic though, isn't it? You can tell it's been sort of almost overproduced. And the thing about where you probably hear it is through something like Spotify or some sort of streaming service, correct?
Yeah.
And it just goes through some sort of leveling. It's not how the true artist wanted you to hear it.
What, they wanted you to hear it on vinyl, did they?
Yeah.
What, the true artist for this needs to be heard on vinyl.
Yeah.
It's such a... Do you know what I fucking hate? And I guarantee you're one of these people. Music snobbery. You're a music snob.
No, I used to be.
Yeah. Well, everyone is.
But do you know why? I used to live with and be with a lot of music snobs. So I wasn't a true one. I was a fake one.
Oh, what was you hanging about with, like, you know, real artists, was you? Is that what you're saying? Back in the day?
Yeah. In my house, they made an album in our dining room.
Really?
Yeah, and what? I slammed a cupboard kitchen door because I was angry and it got into the album.
What? And how did the album do? And who
very low circulation. They were called Dark Captain, Light Captain.
Okay.
Later just called Dark Captain. Dropped the Light Captain.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, I'm never not heard. Surprised.
What was the album called?
Dark Captain, Light Captain. I don't know. I can't even remember.
I bet it was an EP.
It was an EP,
Yeah. Has, I'm gonna ask you. I've got you to go away and think about this yesterday. So we're gonna start today with. Did you ever used to watch Room 101 on the telly?
Yeah, I did actually.
Frank Skinner did it for a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, and Nick Hancock as well. Do you remember Nick Hancock?
No.
Yeah. Well, he.
What's he look like?
Grey hair.
Did he do footballing bloopers VHS's?
Yeah.
I remember who it was. Yeah. I'll tell you who else did it for a while. The guy off of Have I Got News for You can't say his R's. Do you know what I mean? He's got long hair. Do you watch Have I Got News for You?
I can only think of Jonathan Ross who can't say his own.
No. Do you watch Have I Got News for You?
Sometimes.
All right.
Not religiously.
Let's. What, you don't watch it on your knees while praying? So, I've asked you, Room 101, for people that don't know, is basically where we chuck everything that we want to get rid of. Yeah, so it's like things that are really irking you at the moment.
Yeah.
So I've asked you to do one person, one place, and one thing. Yeah. So let's start with person. And I told you that person could be people as well if you didn't want to be directly horrible to one person.
This one's controversial.
Oh, good start.
And I think it may upset you.
Okay.
But I would get rid of Santa Claus.
Well, why would that upset me? Oh, because Santa on the roof. Yeah, it does upset
maybe.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I am upset. Tell me why, Hass.
He's all hype. Like, he's untouchable. No one can kind of say a bad word against him.
Yeah.
He only really works one day of the year.
Yeah. Well, that's what everyone on LinkedIn wants nowadays, isn't it?
What, working one day?
Yeah, work where you
want. Look at you, man. Who are you? Some sort of Luddite. he gets all his minions to do the work and then he takes all the credit.
Yeah. Oh, he sounds like who you hate on Twitter as well.
Who's that?
What's his name?
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Santa Claus is Elon Musk. Right? He makes people, even the poor ones, like you, put out food for him. Like so he can eat.
Yeah.
He should be working. Why are you eating? Right? Oh, hold on. Also, like, Mrs. Claus never gets a look in. It's all about fucking Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah. He's a raging misogynist,
exactly.
Isn't he? Obviously.
So, yeah, Santa Claus. Do one.
Was there a moment, do you remember the moment that your children worked the whole Santa Claus thing out? And I won't say it directly in case there's any kids listening.
Work what out, Josh?
What, that he doesn't, that he's not what? Real. You've made me say it, so. Do you remember the
moment? My kids listen to my podcast.
Do they? Yeah.
Sometimes. But they're old enough. But sometimes.
They're old enough to know he's not real, right?
Josh, what are you doing?
Should I not be saying that?
We haven't had this conversation. See, the thing I think kids do is they know.
When though?
But who knows? It can be at different... There's no date. You like. There's no fix date. Hang on, let me finish. But then what they do is they don't tell you they know. They stretch it out because they get more shit by stretching it out. So I think my eldest... We still haven't had the conversation. Obviously, she knows he doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Oh, you made me say it now, right? but we've never had the conversation.
So you've never okay. That's what I was interested in.
Yeah.
I used to work with a bloke, by the way, who used to say, "No, I never let my kids believe in Santa. I'm not working my ass off all year to buy them shit to tell them that somebody else did it for you."
It's a good point. Yeah. Magically.
No, but I like the magic. But my 6-year-old daughter is at the point where I don't think she's going to get another year fully believing.
Really.
Is that late or early?
I don't know, but ours, we've milked it a bit longer. 8, maybe. I think.
She must have known before 8, mate.
Well, we didn't know about
it. Oh, yeah. Well, they don't tell you anything, your kids, clearly.
No, I'm not very present at home.
No, but...
When they grow up, they'll come find some sort of guru that will help them see into their past. A bit like you, right, Josh?
There'll be a book for that by then.
Yeah. Gathering dust. I'll use it to like...
We're considering telling them this year. Just saying, he's not...
Okay.
Not real.
But does he go in the room or not? Does he?
What?
Santa Claus.
What, does he go in my kid's room? Is that what the question is?
Yeah, does he?
No.
No,
they're too scared.
No.
We have to say that.
I'm saying, does it go in room 101?
Oh, sorry.
I
can't put Santa Claus in room 101. Oh, yeah, I get to decide whether it goes in, don't I? It's not going in.
Okay.
So you get to decide if mine does. That's okay. How we're going to do this.
Okay.
So I've gone with, not a person, I've gone with a group of people, right? And this is slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also my truth. Well-being people, even though I'm one of them.
You want to stick yourself in room 101?
I particularly virtue signaling ones, right? As the well-being space has grown, everyone's on board with it, right? And some of the stuff that, what I particularly hate is, not hate, hate's a strong word. What particularly gets my goat is when you can see that people are really playing up to it and it's not who they truly are and it feels really over-rehearsed and unrealistic. You're fucking looking at me blanking.
No, I thought you were going to say something.
No, that's it. I haven't planned it out. You know, I haven't completely assassinated somebody like you did with Santa Claus.
No, with Santa Claus.
But in general, I really... You know what I struggle with is...
Go see a well-being person.
No, but... yeah, they'll help me get through it. Is stuff becomes gimmicky really, really quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like online and on social media. And I think that's what I struggle with the most is when it's already become like, you know, when you get fad food diets and everyone's doing keto and that's, you know, the most healthy thing. And we've never known all that. And like you get it with ice baths now. Everyone and their dog is ice bathing and it's cured all of their stuff. And, you know, they can't wait to put a picture of them getting in the cold and showing how zen they are. Now, I ice bath, You know, I got an ice bath in the back garden.
This isn't going well for you, Josh.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's the performative thing of it. And then here's another one that I don't like, is people setting their cameras up to cry at them.
Yeah.
That's, like, really, it feels really inauthentic to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other one... is ice baths when people cry at the cameras. And then like filming yourself meditating all of the time. I get it as a one-off to show people that's what you do, right? But you document yourself. But you get people that are like every morning filming themselves meditating. And I think if you're filming yourself, you're not meditating.
Yep.
Probably.
Yeah. And you're thinking about how you're coming across on camera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you're being inauthentic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, thanks,
mate. Stick them
in. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, don't like them.
I'm taking that as one.
Yeah, we don't like people anyway, so.
Well, genuinely, right? I was actually going to go with people.
Just people.
I was going to say, I'd like to put everybody in there. Okay, good. Let's go to a place. What place did you want to put in it?
Place.
Yeah.
Airports.
Okay, go on.
Like... They're fucking inefficient. They're just like, you have to add on a half a day onto your travel just to get through an airport. And it's a shit experience. There's often no seats. It's full of people.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But the main thing is, it's like, it's screaming out for innovation and efficiency. You're just doing the same old thing that you did 40, 50 years ago. And it's rubbish.
Yeah.
But I like flying places. I just haven't done it for a long time, so that's probably why I hate airports.
I only hate airports on the way back.
No, I'm just saying in general, airports.
Or even on the way, you don't enjoy it. You don't like get to the airport, have some grub and a drink and...
I do.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I like it.
You don't enjoy it.
No,
you're just fucking miserable, aren't you? You've gone with Santa and holidays so far.
I didn't say holidays. I like travel. I just don't like the airport. And I think people... will agree that like it's just not very efficient. It's why do you have to check in for 14 hours before you fly?
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
Yeah,
and it doesn't speed anything up, does it?
As well, then no one really looks at it. They don't really care.
I don't know, man. I think
unless you look like me, you'll be fine. Yeah, yes, Mr. Connolly, just Breeze on through. You look great. How are you? Just Kaya. You don't look like an upstanding citizen. Can you step out of line, please? We're just going to do a scrotal search.
To be fair, I used to get searched all of the time. Since I've grown my hair and I look a lot more spiritual.
Oh, we're the same.
And like,
yeah,
a, and like, a, well, and like a well-being guru, yeah. I get searched less now.
Let's see what happens when you go to the States.
All right.
Yeah. But anyway, airports.
Okay, good. I'm going to put it in there because I feel sorry for you. But I like airports. I go like that.
Ding.
My place that I want to put in there is LinkedIn.
Oh.
Something's happened to LinkedIn, man.
Yeah.
Do you feel me?
Yeah, I feel you, man.
I've fallen bang out of love with LinkedIn. I really struggle. The virtue signaling on there is horrendous now. Yeah. I see very, very little authenticity on there. There's a lot of ads on there, by the way, nowadays. Yeah. I never used to.
Also, can anyone post anything now without putting it on a carousel that's been made on Canva?
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? Oh, it's just everything.
Yeah, and...
I had cornflakes for breakfast today.
Yeah.
Scroll through 9 slides just to
see
that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And, like, the virtue signaling has reached a point where... I see so many people that are just clearly, and I'm probably not free of this myself. I'm sure I do it, but I see so many people on LinkedIn posting what is clearly something that they don't like or something that they're getting, that is clearly a projection of themselves. Because I look at the post and I think you're virtue signaling about something that you fucking do.
Can you give an example?
Probably.
Not of a person.
Probably one out of five of my last posts.
All right, yeah, just have a look at yours.
No, but like, I'm talking particularly in the well-being space that I operate in. Do you know what I mean? Like, particularly, the latest thing is to just completely go at people's work culture. So and there's this well-being thing now where they just completely dismantle any company that's working hard. And it's just like... And so that's one, but that's not the hypocritical ones. I guess the hypocrisy ones I'm talking about is when I can't give you an example without putting somebody in the mire, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah, fine. So, definitely don't want to do that on LinkedIn.
Definitely
you can get in trouble.
Exactly. So yeah, for me, mate, it's definitely LinkedIn.
Yeah, in.
In,
straight
thank
away.
You very much. And last one then, thing, Hass. What thing are you putting in there?
Cookies, Josh.
Cookies?
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to upset a few people.
Not nice, crunchy, double chocolate cookies. I'm talking about the cookies that you have to deal with every time you go on a website.
Yeah.
Every time, every single page, every time. And what it does is it plays into my impatience, Josh.
Yeah.
So sometimes I know I shouldn't be accepting, but it's just the quickest way to get to the meat and potatoes. So I just hit accept. But really, you know what I'm saying, isn't it? You've got to go in and you're supposed to kind of uncheck boxes and all that sort of stuff. Otherwise, they'll follow you into the toilet, right? I hate cookies. Like, ever since that came in, it's just that little...
Can't you just not allow all? I always allow them, by the way.
Yeah, and that's what they want, Josh.
What do they do then? Just so they can target market me?
When you say allow all, they set up fake accounts in your name on Instagram.
No, when you click allow all, that means that they
basically
take your data.
Yeah, they're just watching.
Oh, right.
Plugging cookies means they can just plug stuff onto your computer and just track your activity.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
So you shouldn't be.
And so if I say don't accept any,
or then only essential.
These good, caring companies, powerful companies, go, oh, he doesn't want to, so we won't.
Yeah, well, they'll find another way.
I think it's irrelevant anyway. I think they just do it anyway. Surely.
Well, they can't really.
Why not?
Because you've actively...
Because I've said no. What? Yeah, but that's like...
Are you just giving in? That's the same as like saying, oh, well, let's just let the Tories in because they're in power.
No, it's not. It's not fucking remotely
it
like
is
that.
Remotely
it's completely
like that.
Different.
Yeah.
It's completely
so
different.
So you like cookies, do you?
Pardon?
Is that what you're saying?
No, but I do think that I think they track our data anyway. I do. I think...
What are you basing that on, Josh?
Pardon?
What are you basing that on?
Track record.
Track record?
Yeah. Like so, social media. Before this cookie stuff come in, didn't it? Because social media were doing it anyway without our permission, yeah?
Yeah.
All the apps were doing it. And then everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this.
Yeah.
So.
And then they find a way around it.
Wake up, Hass.
So you're not going to let me have
cookies,
are you? Just wake
up. You're asleep. No, I'll put cookies in there.
Just Ding.
Pointless, but they're going in. My one, I think this is a good one.
Can I say what I would have had as well before we do that?
Yeah, here's what you could have had, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say food at stadiums.
What, the price of it?
It's overpriced, it's tasteless, it's cardboard shit, but you're sort of prisoner.
Yeah.
So that was a close second.
Yeah, especially at these big corporations that you go and watch.
Yeah.
It's a bit better at the clubs I go and watch. Proper football, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I don't go and watch a big corporation.
You couldn't make it into a big corporation, Josh. You're only in corporations because of me.
Mate, I went to Tottenham Stadium when you hooked me up. And by the way, it was insanely good. But I wouldn't swap what I've got at Swindon. Anyway, my thing that's going in there is school emails. Do you get the school emails or do they go, do you get them?
They get them. Yeah, I get them.
They
get them. Aaron gets them.
There's so many of them, ain't there? Do you read them?
No.
I never read them,
sometimes,
ever.
Sometimes if it piques my interest.
If
they get the email hook
they get
right.
The email hook right, then you're in. Yeah.
But mostly they don't.
Oh, like you need a full-time person to read fucking school emails.
Yeah.
Like it was better when they used to send home a letter. Because then at least you had the excuse as a parent of like, they didn't bring it home, the little, you know what I mean?
So-and-so,
correct. Yeah, so school emails, mate.
I can't put that in, Josh.
Why?
Just because you didn't put Santa Claus in.
I'll put it in there then.
All right.
Okay, good. Hass, I want to do a check-in. I don't want to be too long with this check-in.
Oh, so just rush my answer, yeah?
So I'm going to want you to rush your answer. No, I don't want you to rush your answer, but let's just be...
Can I have a smint?
Yeah.
You didn't offer me.
These are extra strong. How many do you buy?
I roll deep.
Oh, there's three there. Go on, yeah. You're dressed like a hip hop. Triple dropping.
Okay.
Good. We're good. So look, the check-in I'm gonna check in today with a question that I want you to answer. So what has been your biggest struggle so far this year?
Last week was a tough week, a really tough week. I think for a number of reasons, which we've talked about off of the show. But I think what I realised was I think that I'd underestimated the impact of my business partner, Krish, leaving at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And it's all really amicable. And, you know, he's going off to live his dream and live in Canada. So that part of me, my heart is big for that, right? But I don't think I fully anticipated what it was like. And I've got an incredible bunch of people around me. But the way I am, as you know, is I always try and be in control. And I think that's basically took its toll last week. And I say took its toll. I just really felt it last week in a way that I hadn't. And in a way that I think I externally projected in a way that I don't normally. So I normally handle a lot of stuff internally. And so I think... That was a realization, but what I'll also say is that getting through those tricky moments was done through collaboration and leaning in and taking counsel from people around me that I trust, and that got me through the week. So I think just underestimating Krish not being around and there's sort of the emotional side of not having one of your best mates around. But also your business partner that you've built something for 8 years. It's just the mental load of going, two of us kind of share the load of this to just it being you.
Yeah.
So that's been the hardest thing. But it's just a transition, that has to be gone through. And getting through that week was a really important one. I don't think you truly learn until you've been to a place of challenge.
Yeah.
It's through that bit of challenge that you really learn. Like if it's always plain sailing, then you just never understand how to be in those moments of adversity.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
How about you?
So mine is, we've sort of touched on it a little bit. You mentioned a couple of bits, but mine is social media. Social media is like the biggest tool in my work, yeah, in kind of reaching people in the way that I want to reach them with the stuff that I want to reach them with. Social media is an integral part of it, right? But if it wasn't, I would get rid of it completely. Mm. I wouldn't have it at all. Mm. Like I've talked loads about how I never used to have it before I did this work. And because of my like constant want to escape all of the time and that stuff. And what I'm like with those things, there's that part of it where I get caught up doom scrolling and it takes too much of my headspace. And then I do all of the kind of unhealthy things that I'm sure people are aware of that you do with social media, you know, looking at somebody else who's in a similar space to you and thinking, you know, why are they better than me and all that sort of stuff. But then also, as my following's grown, so has like the pool of strange things that happen and strange ways that people, you talked about the fake account. And at the beginning, that thing worried me a little bit because it was such a big account. Mm. And then it's like happened again with other accounts. And then like some of the weird stuff and the ways that people interact with me. And it's not just like on social media, but social media is where they start. And then they, like some of the interactions that you get, like fucking don't do my anxiety and stuff any good. Mm. And it's really taught me, you know, when you look at like people who have a platform, like famous people and that, yeah, and like you see them getting trolled horrendously all of the time, your knee-jerk reaction is to just be like, well, just fucking ignore it. It's just words on social media.
Yeah.
But it's mental how much it does affect you. Yeah. It is mental. The trolling, I can deal with the trolling. That doesn't bother me. Like, that's standard when it's just, like, crazy stuff that holds no relevance. The next layer of that is when people attack you as a person or they attack your job and your role, your character. That, if you see them, sometimes that can get to you.
Yeah.
But then also when people like abuse boundaries and like trust and stuff like that, it's people that, like, you, when we go back to what we were going to put in 101 and it was people, you know, there's some, I don't know what the word I want to look for is, but there's some strange stuff out there when, yeah, you put it bluntly.
You seem to have hit a tipping point where you suddenly just alerted a bunch of other people about your existence, and that, yeah, just opened up something. So what do you think you can do to help you on that journey around that?
Well, look, shout out to Debs, because like Debs started with me in December and has been integral really to me just now being able to just pass stuff on and to create a little bit more distance between me and my audience, because that's the thing. Some of them they end up having too much access. I mean, it's mental to me that once upon a time I used to have my phone number on all my emails.
I think your address as well, right?
Yeah, that used to go out on some other things. Yeah, yeah, so just mental to, yeah, that, like, to where I am now. And it's like, it's not a massive problem. It's actually what it is in the end, you have to say, this is part of the territory. So I need to learn how to be okay and navigate, yeah, it. And I am, but when it happens, when you get firsts happening,
yeah,
they worry you. Like somebody who's like anxiety driven by me, like me,
yeah,
they spike that stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think it's just getting used to it and navigating it. But I do often think to myself, you know, sometimes it leads me to a place where I think, life was much simpler when I just worked in a factory, had no social media, earned my crust and went home.
Yeah.
Which is a natural thought, right? It's not never a rational, I might leave my job go back to working in a factory. Do you know what I mean? Because the positives completely outweigh it, but that's not what the question
was. Yeah, I mean, last week I said to John, my other business partner, mate, I said, I just wish I could go back to working in a record store.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, but, you know, that wouldn't be fun now. And no, I don't mean now. Like, life's, yeah, too complex to do that now. But I meant, like, if I could just port back to that moment in time. Life was simple.
Yeah.
It was easy. It was fun. Like, I did my shift. And then I didn't have to think about it. And that was it. So I do think, though, we can overcomplicate stuff,
yeah,
in our heads.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's probably systems that we can create, like you have done with Debs coming on board. There's systems that you can create to kind of make sure that you don't get triggered by some of these things that are just kind of part and parcel of operating in the world today.
Yeah.
So, and I've sort of learned some of those lessons that you just kind of put the systems around you to kind of support you. So that almost, you don't even have to think about it. It's just like, let the system take,
yeah,
care of it.
Which is what it really, like, I don't know how I existed without Debs now. Do you know what,
yeah,
I mean? She only came in at the beginning of December, and we're not even through January.
Yeah.
And I regularly say to her, I have no idea how I survived before you. And, yeah, she actually says herself,
yeah, yeah,
I've no idea either. Yeah. So yeah, mate, but like I say, the good definitely outweighs the bad, and it's not something that's keeping me up at night or anything like that. But it is something that I've felt that I needed to talk about, because you are, it's one, some of these things, one, you don't sort of expect them to come up, and then when they do, you have a tendency to think you should just be able to get on with it. So it's good that you can sort of bring it up and explore it. Moving on now. Anyway, Haz, so today's topic that I want to bring to the table, we're actually going to talk about trauma. And what trauma means, and try and just explore this the best we can in the time that we've got. I want to sort of just hand it over to you, really, to maybe just explain why that word has come out more into the light in your world recently.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, look, we won't pretend that we haven't talked about some of this.
No, of course.
Offline, obviously we have, and that's part of why I'm sort of moving through it a little bit at the moment. But I would say last year I started a journey of this self-discovery that maybe I hadn't explored ever, really, you know. And even though I've done a lot of personal development, done a lot of self-development, and that's where my work centres, there's a part of me I've always probably kept quite locked away, even from myself. And I was doing a lot of driving up and down from Brighton to London for my mum's place that was getting, we were getting ready to get renovated. And so listened to a lot of podcasts, and I came across an episode of a podcast that I listened to quite regularly. And Dr. Gabor Mate was on there, and I thought it was quite funny because you've been talking to me about him for years, right? Yeah. And I've, you know, I haven't really paid any attention. I thought it was like something that's for Josh and Josh's work that he does around, you know, his childhood and all that sort of stuff. And I respect that he means a lot to you, but like, so I'm not like, I didn't take the piss out of it, but it's just, it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And honestly, like when I was listening to him speak, it was like so many light bulbs were going off around my own, like who I am today and my childhood and how connected they are. And of course, some people will listen and say, well, of course, it's your childhood, it's connected. But I think where I was pointing to is when you've talked about trauma, childhood trauma, I've often thought it was really about traumatic events, right? Mm. An event or series of events or a consistency of events like abuse or something like that, that leads to somebody, you know, showing up in a particular way as an adult. I did have trauma. I was 10 months old and my dad passed away. Now, I've always told myself, well, I was 10 months old. Mm. I didn't know. I was none the wiser. So I've just been raised as somebody that didn't, you know, it's a sad story. I didn't have a dad, but the trauma bit was something that was not part of my life. The trauma was my mum. She had the trauma of losing her husband, and my sister, who was 6 years older than me, she lost her dad. That was the trauma. So I've always told myself that story. But what I've started to realize that actually, as a 10-month-old, I suffered the trauma of just, you know, I was almost a year. Like you've said, the first 4 years is when your brain is most active, right? And so in that first 10 months, I would have been building so many pathways with my dad, and then he just disappeared. So there's sort of something there that really spoke to me. But then also, it was also understanding as a parent of three now, like how we are makes a difference. Mm. Both when we intentionally try and do good, but also when we unintentionally do bad, when we intentionally do bad, and when we unintentionally do good. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah.
So I was starting to realize, I was driving, and I was like, oh gosh, like, so my sense of always wanting to be in control, which is a strength of mine, I believe, but it can also tip into a non-strength, you know, something that takes away energy from me, is always wanting to be in control. Always wanted to kind of have a perfect outcome to certain things. But I realized a lot of that stems from the way that we were raised, because when my mum lost my dad, she was just 27. Mm. So she was still very, very, very young. She hadn't done her maturing as an adult in a way, but suddenly had to accelerate. But then my dad's friends and their families, some of them were a bit older. And so they almost, I think some of it came from a good place, which was, we have to look out for my dad's family.
Yeah, yeah.
but it came as quite overbearing and telling me to behave in a particular way, or my sister or my mum to behave in or be a certain way. And so my mum proactively didn't, you know, she's a proud woman, so she didn't want to have anyone tell us that we weren't right because there wasn't a male figure in the house. So we always had to kind of be perfect in a way. So I think some of that really started to kind of come home to me. So, and then just a few moments, which I'm not going to talk about here because that's private for me and my family, that makes me understand more about myself.
Yeah. What? Just taking it back a moment, right? When you listen to the Gabor Mate podcast, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it was the way that Gabor spoke about it solely that opened you up? Do you think it was the right podcast at the right time? What was it about that podcast that all of a sudden opened you up? Because let me just say this. He wouldn't have said anything in that podcast that you haven't probably heard me say.
Yeah, there was nothing new there.
Yeah, so
there's a couple of moments where I probably absorbed it, but I think you asked the question, was it the right podcast at the right time in the right moment? And that's what it was.
But so what was it? We know that it was the right podcast because it was Gabor Mate and he's a Don, right? And he speaks about it in such an eloquent and clear and compassionate way, right? If we accept that for a moment, why was it? Have you got any idea? Have you got any insight into what it was about that moment?
I was driving back from my mum's, caught in a bit of traffic. It was a greyish Sunday afternoon. I'd done some work. I'd just been with my mum. So I was almost primed for it because I'd just left my mum. And left my mum, driving back to my own kids, my own family. So that was kind of the condition setting.
Do you think also the condition setting, and this is not a trick question, so the answer might be no, but what you've gone through with Krish and everything with the business.
Yes.
Do you think that like created the fertile ground to have that moment?
Yeah, I was probably unwittingly feeling vulnerable.
Yeah.
At towards the back end of last year.
Most
definitely.
Yeah.
The other thing I realized was a little bit of my work brain was kicking in, which is when you're driving, you're almost in the best moment to like listen to something.
Yeah.
Because you're in flow.
Mm.
When you're in flow, you're sort of doing things almost instinctively, intuitively. So when you're driving, you have to be alert.
Yeah.
Because you have to look what's going on, but you're in flow because you're just kind of, you're not even really thinking about it. You're just kind of driving. It's kind of, hopefully for most people, it's kind of an effortless thing that you need to be doing. But you have to stay alert and focused. So that's a perfect time. You're primed, you're in flow, and there's nothing else. You can listen to music, which I do often, but actually I find that podcasts are brilliant. What was really interesting is I find it very difficult with decision fatigue.
Yeah.
There's so much. I don't know where to start. So what I think was really interesting was that I picked that one in that particular moment. And I think maybe it was to do with what was going on for me and recognizing that I needed to give myself something.
So you had this discovery, right? So you had this discovery on listening to the podcast. You kind of discover that you said the words, was hiding it from everyone and probably myself.
Yeah.
You've had these realizations about, look, it makes perfect sense to me, right? And it probably does to you. When you lay out this, like, you think that the traumatic moment of losing your dad when you was 10 years old is one thing.
10 months.
Yeah. 10 months old, sorry, is one thing, yeah?
Yeah?
But then to go on, imagine now the pressure, if you can picture a child at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the pressure of not only do we want you to behave in this certain way, but the reason that we want you to behave in this certain way is, one, to honor your dad, and two, to look after your mum, right? It makes perfect sense to me that you would have developed this need and desire to control everything that you can control, right? A form of like perfectionism, right?
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah,
sorry to interrupt your flow. From probably about 3 years old, that's what I can probably remember. I was told, what I can recall. I was told, you're the man of the house now.
Yeah.
You're the man of the house now.
Literally told that?
Yeah.
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 At 3 years
every
old.
Time, every time. You're the man of the house.
Yeah.
So anytime I would be acting out, because that's what friends, you do with your friends. I would be the one that would get kind of pulled out and disciplined.
Yeah.
But you have to be responsible.
And that's huge responsibility for a three-year-old. And by the way, this is very, very common. So this is, I think, an important moment to just highlight this as well, right? This isn't about saying that your mum or your, you know, your extended family and the people that were close to your mum, it's not to say that they're to blame or that they got things wrong. I actually think that you're the man of the house idea is something that's always fed to children.
Mm.
And actually, not just in the concept of the man of the house, but even in, you know, your mum or your dad is struggling, children will often be told, you need to be strong, you need to be tough, right? Yeah. And that's, you know, if you can imagine that the pressure and the impact that that has on children.
Yeah.
Right?
Can I just clarify something as well? Because I think to the point you were just making, that never came from my mum.
No, right, okay.
So, because I think that's maybe what you're like, and I do want to come on to like what all of this exploration is doing with me and my relationship with my mum today.
Mm.
But that never came from my mum. It came from other people.
Yeah.
Projections.
Yeah, so projections.
Family, friends, and
exactly,
people kept saying to
and
me.
And that's the wider idea of what society does to children, right? Mm. We do this weird thing where during adult struggle, children seem to be made to be the ones that need to sort that out, right? To be strong for their mum or their dad, right? Or to become the man in the house. So I don't think that's isolated to you. I think that's something that's really, really common, right? And so children naturally develop this kind of people-pleasing, controlling mentality, right? This is why I think things, when you look at like things like work addiction and any other form of addiction, people think it's the loss of control when you become addicted to something. It does become that, but actually addiction is all about having control, right? It's all about, I can go straight to my work and I know this will work. When my mind and my body is unmanageable and feels scary, I have that thing that I know that I can do. Tap into alcohol, food, work, all of that stuff, yeah? The question I did want to ask you before we perhaps make sure that you have time to move on to what you just said is how conscious do you believe, up until you listened to that podcast, how conscious were you of this discovery, of the impacts of your childhood? Do you think you were completely unaware? Do you feel like there was a sense of there was a part of you having that battle in the background? Or do you think it was completely subconscious and you didn't realise at all? Do you understand the question?
Yeah, I do. I think I was conscious of it, but I only looked to what you might call the positive sides of it, right?
Yeah.
The, like how I grew through adversity, how we had a challenging life and we stuck together and we, you know, and so, we, you know, I tell the story, like whenever I tell the story of my mum, I do it with pride because I see the impact it has. But then people also look at me and go, well, you know, well done, you know. So there's sort of, I use that as fuel for, you know, being successful, right? Like I attribute a lot of what I've created as a result of my childhood experiences. What I think I was not aware of, or I'd shut away so deep that I didn't even think about it, was the unhappy moments, the negative contributing factors, the things that feed my anxieties, or some of the things I'm less proud of, you know, and I'd also put rose tinted glasses across my whole childhood, and that's what I wasn't really tuned into. I wasn't tuned into that at all.
Yeah. And listen, this is what I think is really, really important. Again, when we look at coming away from the family and looking at it as the societal pressures and what's expected of people, we're expected to find those rose-tinted glasses. If you look at the mental health conversation in general, if you look at the way that self-help is done and personal development, right, it's all about reaching that place of being able to have been through a hard time and be able to say to you, but it made us who we were. We, you know, it made us a strong family. All of those things are true. Right. But what I believe is absent and what is missing and what I try to do in the work that I do, and hopefully you can, like, you can see that and might, you know, this for people that are listening, when I think people discover this, it's not about coming back to that rose tinted view. Right. I'm hearing from you what was lacking, it was your ability to be able to explore those difficult moments. Free from judgment, free from the need to wrap them up in what is all the positive stuff, but having the ability to be able to go, nah, this was really difficult and this was hard. Mm. And that's what I think society struggles with. Mm. You know, even if I say to you, this happened when I was a child and I really struggled with the way that my mum reacted to this situation or something, yeah? Mm. Most people will then try and get me to navigate towards being able to see the good in it and, you know, love my mum and understand why she did it. And I think all of that stuff is useful. However, if you bypass the difficult experience that comes with it, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you bypass that difficult experience that you had as a result, then you're bypassing and it stays there. It doesn't go away, it stays there.
Yeah.
And then a big part of you spends its life trying to manage that,
yeah,
rather than reaching a stage where you can embody it.
Yeah.
And you can have that duality of, you know, there's great positives to come out of this and it was really, really difficult,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely. The thing that was springing to my mind was and not or, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you think about when people used to hold a picture of a glass of milk and it was only halfway up the glass.
Yeah.
And they were almost trying to get you to say, oh, are you a glass half empty or a glass half full?
Yeah.
Right? And some people will probably just go, oh, it's half full, because you want to project that you're optimistic. It's both.
Yeah.
It's both half empty and half full.
Yeah.
And you got like sit with that.
And both, you got to sit with both of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't just bypass the fact that it is half empty.
Because what I'm saying is, it's half full, true.
Yeah.
And it's also half empty.
Yeah.
And you can't bypass it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what we tend to do. We try, like, you know, even I've probably been guilty of it in the past. I try not to do it anymore. But when one of my kids is hurt, like physically hurt or feeling emotionally a bit sensitive, you tell them to wrap up their crying really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you want them to bypass it because you're uncomfortable with it. And so we do, like, never does it show up more than when you're a parent, right? And I notice that with my kids. I can do all the work that I do, be comfortable. And this is probably the thing that I find most difficult about the work that I do. You can bring me your pain and I'll sit with it and hold it and let you be with it, yeah? When my kids bring me it, because it takes me instantly there, right? And trauma happens within my relationships, they're the ones I'll shut down. Mm. They're the ones who I will bypass their pain and struggle and try and get back to that feeling good.
Mm.
And so I think this happens to all children.
Yeah.
I think this happens to all children because we're all emotionally suffering and to a degree we're all trying to bypass that suffering.
Yeah.
And I see it in the well-being space all of the time with like what I would call toxic positivity, what I would call with, you know, I talk a lot about difficult childhoods and even toxic parents, right? And I get a lot of people say you should forgive and let go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that might be a nice place to reach, right?
Yeah.
But how do you do that?
Yeah.
And by the way, just saying I forgive and I've let go of it is nearly always bypassing.
Yeah, yeah.
You understand? And I think what you find is, for me, the journey becomes discovering the things that you've bypassed and becoming more comfortable with them. And you become more comfortable with them by acceptance.
That's my journey.
Yeah.
That's my journey. And what I will say is I think if anyone does this kind of work, Josh, for themselves, I think around their childhood, and this is just coming from my own experiences, is it's really important to hold the truth that you've held around how you were raised, but also, but not try and rewrite history. So yeah. Well, I'm not trying to go back and demonize my mum for the way that she raised me. She's still my hero, right? And what she did rightly deserves, you know, like all the accolades and praise she gets for what she did. And there's been an evolution and a revolution in understanding around parenting since late 70s, early 80s, right? Yeah. So to go back and with what we know now and almost, you know, rescore the test is a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I've been really careful not to just come back and come at my mum and go, why did you do this? Or why did... And by the way, it wasn't just her. It was me. It was my sister. It was our whole dynamic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How we all showed up.
And the lack of support you had as a family.
Yeah. So I think it's just about understanding. And it's more about where we go from here.
Yeah.
It's how do I take what I know, all those experiences, the things that I didn't know, and just help myself to understand myself better first.
Yeah.
And then try and be a better parent.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the ultimate answer to that is about just shedding light on it.
Yeah.
Because the things that we push down and feel like we can't express, when we can't express our truth, we push it down into our body and then we have to work hard to hide it.
Mm.
And so the solution is not about going, wow, you've got all of these broken parts that need fixing, because they're not broken. There's nothing that needs fixing. What it needs is light shed on it, right? The ability for you to be able to feel witnessed and heard in that experience,
yeah,
right? And with nobody trying to fix it.
Yeah.
With nobody going, yeah, but your mum did, or yeah, you know, your family did. That's not what you need. You need to be witnessed. What you need is, shit, yeah, man, I know how much you love your mum and I know she's a hero. And wow, with that fact, that must make that even harder for you to experience.
Yeah.
That feeling of being let down by your sister or the people around you or whoever it may be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the duality of life. Like, people that we love will let us down.
Yeah.
Right. Either purposely at one end of the spectrum,
yeah,
or you're completely by accident at the other end of the spectrum. Right. But it doesn't help, or it's not useful to bypass the way that makes you feel, whether they did it by accident or not.
Yeah.
Whether they did it because of their past experiences or not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If I accidentally tripped over and dropped a brick on your foot, right, you could understand it was an accident, love me and know I didn't mean to do it, but you still got to go to the hospital and get your foot sorted out.
Yeah.
You still need to look at that and check that it's all right.
Yeah.
And I think what we sometimes do is we go, no, my foot's fine, right? And it's like, it's not fine. I've dropped a brick on it. It was an accident, but you still need, you understand what I'm saying?
100%.
Yeah. And I think that is about just having the ability to be witnessed and have it seen.
And I think just one thing that, you know, just to wrap up, something that really resonated in what you just said was, you're not broken. I think the fact is, I don't feel broken. And if I had to feel broken to go into this work, I would never have gone in there.
Yeah.
But it's because I recognize that actually, you know, all these parts of me are important. It's just some of those parts have not been explored. And I also know enough that is going to help me be more connected going forward.
And let me just say lastly, and we won't have time for the reason to be cheerful. We'll wrap up. But and maybe I feel like we should definitely revisit this because well, we're both on a journey, right? But we'll be able to come back to it. But the bypassing that you have done throughout your whole life should as well not be demonized, right? It was incredible that you were able to do it until it came up when it did, which was either when you were ready or when you couldn't hold it down anymore, right? So sometimes even everything that I've said about not bypassing, and I even said that bypassing isn't useful, it is of course useful to a degree until we are ready to say, right, now I want to start looking at some of this stuff. So that escapism, bypassing, all of that stuff, we demonize that and say, you know, and that's what happens in the healing world. People go, you need to heal your shit and deal with it right now, right? Which is great and fine. Actually, you don't.
Hmm.
Actually, you don't. You need to do what you need to do to get through today in the best way that you can, with a knowing that when I'm ready, there's people around me and things that I can do to feel witnessed and seen in my experience. Yeah.
Those healing people, they're not saying it anymore, by the way, because they're in the room.
They're in 101. I got rid of them. Yeah. Mate, a good way to end. I appreciate you. Your vulnerability today as well, and your ability to allow us to kind of explore some of that stuff. And I think people listening will take a lot away from it.
Cheers, man.
Thanks again for listening to 115 Miles with Josh Connolly and Hassan Khan.